Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame-Free Zone. Welcome. I am your host, Veronica Monet, and we have another delightful guest this evening. We're going to be talking about hypnotherapy, which I think is a very fascinating topic. I've actually been hypnotized myself a couple times. My guest is Jane Ransom, and she's actually got a pretty interesting background here. She has been an international news editor, a creative writing professor, a graphic designer, a painter, a screenwriter, and she's won two book awards, one in poetry and the other in fiction, for an erotic novel called Bye Bye. We might have to ask her a little about her erotic novel since this is the Shame-Free Zone. And she has found her most passionate calling as a certified hypnotherapist. She loves to help other people succeed by accessing the power of the subconscious mind. Jane, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you, Veronica. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. I just have so many questions for you. But just before we went on air, you had said something about your voice being a little bit stressed because you've been hypnotizing all day. And I think it would be really fun for me and the listeners to get a little idea of just what is it like, a day in the life of a hypnotherapist?
Well, it's a lot of fun. As you were just talking about, this is my fourth career, and it's the most fun. It's the keeper because every client is so different. So today was a long day because I had a few first sessions, and each first session is 2 hours long. And about an hour of that is me putting them into hypnosis, and after we talk, you know, just together, then the second hour is me putting them into hypnosis and leading them through whatever visualizations I've determined would be most helpful to them based on what they've told me their issues are and their dreams and their hopes. And every client is so different. You know, I had two clients today, for example, back to back, and one is the sort of person who goes into a state of hypnosis where she's very focused and with me, but her visualizations were not like being on an acid trip or something. They were not like being in a movie. And then the other client, though, in hypnosis, she experienced it very viscerally. She could see and hear and taste and smell everything that she had visualized in hypnosis. So both people will get success out of the process, but each has a very different experience.
So that's fascinating. But so your day, if you are doing an intake or a first session which lasts for 2 hours, then you're doing a lot of talking, or I would imagine in any session, unlike talk therapy where the client does all the talking and the therapist a lot of times just nods their head, you must do most of the talking.
Well, that's true in a sense. In the regular session, the client does most of the talking for the first half hour, and I will ask questions, but mostly I'm listening and taking a lot of notes. And then the second half hour is when I lead them into hypnosis and lead them through whatever exercises we are going to do while they are under hypnosis. But you're absolutely right, and it's so different from talk therapy in other ways as well, because we don't dwell on the negatives. We don't rehearse over and over why they have a problem. As soon as we know the why, we move on to the what's going to get rid of this, what do you want to do, how do you want to feel, and we create the positive, and we create the future and the now instead of always dragging back to the past. So it's extremely different kind of therapy, and that's one of the reasons I like it. I went through 8 years of talk therapy and ended up feeling a bit in a rut myself, as if I wasn't really changing anymore. And then I discovered some neurolinguistic programming exercises, even just for myself, and some self-hypnosis. And those worked so well that then eventually I ended up in hypnotherapy.
Wow. Okay. So, and what do you think the, you probably know, what is it about hypnotherapy that actually works? I mean, why does it have an effect on people? What are we actually doing when we hypnotize somebody?
You know, that's a great question. And I have to be honest, in a sense, nobody knows exactly why it works. We know because of brain imaging technology that's been, you know, new in the past several decades, we know that it truly does work. For example, they've put people under hypnosis in a deep hypnotic trance and followed their brain activity using PET scans or functional MRIs. And for example, one group of people, they put them in a deep trance and they showed them a piece of black and white paper and said, "See brilliant colors on this paper." And the subjects did see the brilliant colors and they reported seeing it, but not only that, their brain activity showed that their visual cortex was behaving exactly the same as though they were seeing brilliant colors. Then they took the same people, but not in a hypnotic trance, and just said, "Try hard as you can," in a waking state, to see the brilliant colors, and they tried, you know, but nothing near the same experience, and their brain activity was also nothing near what it had been under hypnosis. The shortest way I can say that hypnosis works is that it somehow accesses the subconscious mind. But having said that, that's actually most of our mind. You know, you and I met at the Jack Canfield workshop, and he mentioned that 85% of our brain activity or of our mind, our mental activity, is probably subconscious.
Right, he actually showed that slide where it was an iceberg. Our mind was an iceberg, and the part of our mind that's conscious is just a little tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and neuroscientists put the figure even higher, you know, somewhere up in the 90s. But we don't, so hypnotherapy and hypnosis access parts of the mind that we can't normally access. What's also interesting is that hypnosis affects the part of the mind where the suggestion is directed. For example, I was just describing that visual, see the colors, and then the visual cortex was affected. But somebody who's in pain, for example, the pain will travel up the neuron. Say they have a pain in their hand, the pain will travel up to the spine and then up to the dorsal horn. But in the cortical region that handles pain, the hypnosis blocks the pain. So in those brain imaging, you know, pictures, the hypnosis is affecting a totally different part of the brain, and it's blocking the pain from the person's consciousness. So it's very strange in that where you direct the suggestion goes and affects that part of the brain. Now, scientists are now pretty much on board in terms of, wow, this stuff really works. There's a brain imaging technology. It's proof, and Harvard Medical School is very into hypnosis, as is Stanford Medical Center and all, you know, major health institutions. But no one at this point can really answer your question, Veronica. No one can really say why it works. We just know that it does work.
Very interesting. So you would say at this point that it's actually become scientifically verified?
Yeah. If you, for example, you or anyone else goes on the Internet and simply Googles something like hypnosis scientific research, or even go to the more scientific search engines, you will come up with hundreds upon hundreds of studies validating hypnosis, finding it to be, for example, I remember one study, I don't mention this one very often, but being on the shame-free zone, there was one study on male erectile dysfunction, and it was testing a few drugs, I can't remember which ones, but ones that are actually sold for that very problem, and it found that hypnosis was far more effective in curing erectile dysfunction. The only thing as effective in that particular study was the placebo effect.
Oh my gosh,
which is
you're
also
kidding.
Which is also, and the placebo effect, I consider it to be a form of hypnosis. It's just that it's a form of suggestion in the brain. You know, it's an idea that we think something's going to help us. Therefore, the brain behaves as though it has helped us. So
well, I always found that my best cure for ED was laughter.
Yes, yes.
I always told
yes.
clients, I said, try not to get an erection. And they'd start laughing because they were like, well, how do you do that, right? And while they were laughing, they'd get hard. And they go, there you go.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. That is so wonderful.
Reverse psychology works every time, huh?
Yeah. And you're right about laughing, you know, and it gives us so many benefits, you know, psychologically and neurologically. You probably know, you know, actually Jack Canfield mentioned Norman Cousins very briefly.
He did.
He did, Yeah, but he couldn't go through his full story, which, as you probably know, Norman Cousins had a strange kind of cancer, was told he was going to die very soon, and instead he demanded he be let out of the hospital. He moved into a hotel room near the hospital so his doctor could come see him. This was before the days of even VCRs, so he rented a movie camera. He was in so much pain that he could not sleep with the pain, so he watched funny films for hours on end until the laughter created such an anesthetic effect that he was comfortable enough to go to sleep. And then when he'd wake up in pain, maybe 4 hours later, he'd again get himself laughing, watching the movies. I think he was into the Marx Brothers. And after about a week of that, he actually was so well enough, he went back to work. And he lived many years and wrote a book about it. So laughter actually cured him, amazingly.
They actually made a movie about it, too, with Robin Williams.
Oh, see, I am so behind the times, I didn't even know that. Wow.
Well, I think it was the same guy. It was all about this doctor who was going around the hospital making his patients laugh.
Oh, well, I don't know if it was the same guy.
Maybe not. Maybe he read that book, and then maybe this doctor read Norman's book. I'm not entirely sure about that.
Right. But either way, it's the same basic concept, that laughter is very, very good for us. In fact, I sometimes talk about the three G's of happiness, and one being gratitude, one being giving, and the third being grinning, which can be smiling or laughter. And you've also probably heard about the study where they paid people to smile, and they found, in fact, even though those people were paid to smile, no matter how they felt, they actually became happier.
How interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we're starting to pick up a few comments here on Facebook. So let me just read a few of them. I had asked people, what would you like to change about your life?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Liz Copland says she would like to have less drama.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fox Ultrafil says he wants more drama. And then Bianca Tamburini says, Bianca Tamburino says she would like to change procrastination. Maybe you can help our listeners by addressing whether or not is it even realistic to think that hypnosis could address any of that.
Absolutely. In fact, I'll address Bianca's issue, the changing procrastination. One of the clients that came in today came in for exactly this issue. She has a terrific business idea. And she needs to go forward on it. She started it about a year ago and then got stalled. And she has a job, so she can stay in her comfort zone and not pursue her business idea. But she wants to do the business idea, but she's been procrastinating. Usually the problem behind procrastination is fear of change and fear of the unknown. And, you know, the subconscious mind is wired through evolution to keep us in homeostasis, to keep us doing the same old, because at some level the subconscious thinks, oh, that's what's best for us. You know, that kept you alive yesterday. It's probably going to keep you alive today. What we do in hypnosis is we go in and we program, we reprogram the subconscious mind so that whatever it is we're procrastinating from doing, we create a vision of that in the subconscious mind so that it becomes a known rather than an unknown. So, for example, with this client today, I said, okay, what is your first action step that you want to take? I give my clients weekly assignments when they're coming in for career success. So she said, I want to finish my business plan in the next 10 days, and I want to begin reading inspirational books at night that are going to help me build this business. So we put her in hypnosis, and in great detail, we led her through visualizations of working on her business plan. And I'd gotten all the details from her before the hypnosis part, so I knew what to say. And then I let her fill in the others during the hypnosis. I could just say, think about what the room looks like, where you're working, you know, the details, the chair you're sitting in, how it feels, and all that. So we create, so she, in hypnosis, experiences working on the business plan. And then she experiences the success of that, the gratification, the self-esteem, the sense of accomplishment. And we did that for the first 3 days, increasing the sense of accomplishment each day and the calmness and the relaxation and the focus. And then we plant that in the subconscious mind as a memory, as a known, and now the subconscious mind knows how to direct her to actually make that come true in the waking state, because now that fear of change, of something different, is gone. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So that's and that works with almost any issue with procrastination, is just get rid of, usually there's just a fear there, actually, a discomfort.
So
you
what
know?
Is the actual, if you could, like, so mm-hmm. when you're hypnotizing somebody, are you basically telling them, kind of programming them to have a different response, like you will no longer be afraid, or?
Well, it depends on the suggestibility type. People are, the school that I have my diploma from and my hypnotherapy training from is the Hypnosis Motivation Institute in Tarzana, and it was the first college of hypnotherapy to be accredited, federally accredited, and it's a terrific school, honestly. That school teaches that there are different suggestibility types, which is really good stuff, and I found this to be true. So we're on a spectrum, but some people, for example, one end of the spectrum, while they are in hypnosis, you can just give them basically a direct suggestion, like you just said. You'll no longer be afraid of that, although I would phrase it in the positive. Instead of no longer, I would say, you will encounter that and embrace that with delight and joy and enthusiasm, something like that. But you can give them a direct suggestion. Other people on the other spectrum, on the other end of the spectrum, of the suggestibility types, need much more inferential suggestions. So instead of telling them directly, you're going to say, it may surprise and delight you to discover how easily this comes to you and how gratifying it is when you blah, blah, blah. And you kind of weave it in so that they pick up, as you're saying, that they're going to do this. And they pick up that it's going to be successful. But you don't use it as a direct approach, because those types may actually rebel a little bit against being told what to do. And that's my type, by the way. I am that.
Oh, wow.
So my hypnotherapist, whom I work with every 2 weeks, she's always inferential with me, you know, and it works great.
Very interesting. Now, we also have a couple more comments here. I'd ask people, have they ever been hypnotized, why, and what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Liz Coughlin says that she actually had a client with that fetish, and she faked it. So that's kind of some humor there. But Alexander Galetsky, I believe that's how you say your name, Alexander. I hope I didn't trample over your name there. Says, tried it to help quit smoking, and he couldn't be hypnotized.
Oh, you know, I'd like to address that, because I bet his hypnotherapist did not go to the school I just mentioned. I have had so many clients come in and say, I can't be hypnotized, and I don't think I can be hypnotized. People have tried. I can hypnotize anyone that wants to be hypnotized. And the difference is, again, a lot of hypnosis schools only teach you how to hypnotize the people who take the direct suggestions. But because this school, the Hypnosis Motivation Institute, teaches both, you really have all the tools you need. And really, anyone who wants to be hypnotized, a good hypnotist can hypnotize them. It takes a more subtle touch. It takes a lot of flexibility. You have to go with the client where they go and follow them there. But if someone wants to be hypnotized, I promise you I can hypnotize them.
And the difference between you and somebody else is the school you went to?
Yes, I would say in general, yes. I personally would not go to any hypnotherapist who did not graduate from the Hypnosis Motivation Institute. And by the way, I have no affiliation with the school. I'm not getting anything for saying that.
Right.
But the problem with hypnotherapy in the United States is that it's not licensed by any government agency. I think there's some sort of licensing in the state of Indiana, but that's controversial and not necessarily even a good thing in that state. But in the rest of the country, there's no federal or state licensing. And there are a lot of schools who can certify you, quote unquote, just based on an online quiz, for example. So the Hypnosis Motivation Institute was the first school to be accredited by an agency recognized by the federal government. It's got the only online hypnotherapy college that's accredited by the federal government. And it and a couple of the other, there are only maybe two or three other federally accredited schools in the country at this point, got together with, and this will blow your mind, got together with the AFL-CIO in order to find a federal accrediting body that would be outside of the school itself, because it gets very suspect when you have a school saying, give me your money and I'll give you certification. So, in other words, now to get certified, you get your training at one of these accredited colleges, you get your 200 client hours certified and validated by your mentor, then you take your diploma and your training hours to the AFL-CIO, and they certify you. Isn't that wild?
This is very strange.
I know. It's crazy. It's really crazy. But the problem is there are so many non-accredited schools offering bogus certification. It's very easy to hypnotize people, and that's a good thing and a bad thing, but so these schools can very easily teach you how to hypnotize someone, especially of that one suggestibility type, but they don't teach you how to hypnotize the other half of the population, which is the other suggestibility type, nor did those schools teach you how to be a really good hypnotherapist, which is really how to get rid of people's problems once they're under hypnosis.
Okay, so buyer beware, basically, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Now, we've got a couple more comments here from Facebook. This is obviously a very interesting topic for a lot of people. What would you like to change about your life? Amber Norton says, everything. And then we've got Chris Briones, who says, my self-esteem. So can you actually use hypnosis to approach issues of self-esteem?
Yeah, it's one of the most common issues. Yeah, and I love to help people with that because it's so gratifying. You know, it's so painful when you see someone, encounter someone whose self-esteem is low, and typically there's no reason for it. Often I get very intelligent, you know, wonderful people coming in with low self-esteem. I had one woman come in, her husband had left her for another woman, and it had just shattered her self-esteem, and she said she couldn't imagine being attracted to anyone, much less being attractive to anyone else ever again. This lovely young woman was in her late 20s. And anyway, we got her. By the time she finished, she had a new boyfriend, and they are still together. But part of that, allowing her to date again, we first had to build up the self-esteem so she'd exude that confidence. That is one of the easiest issues to treat, because basically you just build that, again, sort of like creating that experience in hypnosis of self-esteem, of feeling it in hypnosis, and you have them sort of memorize the emotion to the subconscious mind, and it comes back to them in the waking state very easily. It's pretty amazing how effective it is for that issue in particular.
So, interesting. So, is it kind of like affirmations? I think I'm still maybe a little bit fuzzy about what it is you actually do during hypnosis to get somebody's self-esteem to become positive. Would you be doing affirmations while they're hypnotized?
Well, you can, and it varies. You know, I have an enormous toolbox or tool shed of tools that I use depending on the person and my intuition of what's going to work best for them and whatever they've told me about themselves. But one very standard hypnotic tool, for example, is you have them visualize themselves at the top of a 20-step stairway or the beginning of a 20-step path. And you have them visualize themselves as they want to be. In other words, if they have a career goal, you have them visualize themselves as having achieved that. They have a weight goal, you have them visualize themselves as slim and fit. And a self-esteem goal, which is always part of the package, no matter whatever else they want, you have them visualize what are they going to look like when they have that self-esteem. And you first have them look at themselves at the beginning of that 20-step stairway or path and see what they look like with the self-esteem. Then they sort of step into the image, or the image steps into them, and they feel the emotions. They really feel the self-confidence, the self-respect, the self-esteem. And while they're feeling that, then you lead them down those 20 steps, each step reinforcing and strengthening that positive self-image. And because they're in hypnosis, those neural pathways get strengthened very quickly and efficiently. And that's one of the standard techniques for self-esteem.
So, and you also mentioned something about self-hypnosis. So I'm thinking, you know, since we went to that conference where we were really, you know, focusing on affirmations and visualizing the results that you want, that you must really have kind of an advantage over a lot of us, but if you're able to access your subconscious like that.
Well, you know, everything Jack Canfield does is stuff, well, I shouldn't say everything, but most of it's stuff that I've learned in hypnotherapy school. A lot of what he does draws on NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. mm-hmm. even though he's not mentioning it too much. But that's a lot of what he does, draws on NLP. The founder of NLP, Richard Bandler, who founded NLP along with John Grinder, Richard Bandler is a hypnotherapist. So for him, hypnosis is always part of NLP. So using the affirmations and the visualizations is always part of hypnosis. When somebody like Jack Canfield leads us through those visualizations, he is, in fact, doing a little bit of light hypnosis. And you, even without training, Veronica, you know, in that early morning time when you wake up and you're still really comfy in bed and you mm-hmm. don't quite want to get up yet, okay, so you are in a slight hypnoidal state in that early morning time. We pass through a hypnoidal state right before we go to sleep and right as we get up, usually in the morning, when you're in that kind of very comfy state. So use that comfy state. Stay in bed a few moments and visualize yourself exactly as I was just describing. Visualize yourself as you want to be, having achieved your goals. Get those feelings. Really let yourself imagine it and indulge in tasting what that success is going to feel like. And then lead yourself in that state along 20 steps, just telling yourself every step reinforces the truth of the self-image. And that's self-hypnosis. Boom. You don't even have to study to do it.
Really? So you actually work with yourself in the early morning when you first wake up, because that's already a point when your subconscious is suggestible.
Yeah, I do. But also I should tell you that because of my training, I do self-hypnosis at other times of the day, and I use some other techniques that I could teach you if you come in. You know, when you come in, I'll show you how to do it. But for somebody who's not trained, that early morning time, as well as the moment right before you go to sleep, when you're getting in that, you know, very comfortable state as well, since those are already semi-hypnotic states, you can just use them. They're there for you. And so that's why anybody who even doesn't have training can use that time. Plus, the early morning is a great time because you are setting the day. And so it's good for that as well. So I do often use my early morning, but I also use other techniques during other times of the day.
Okay, and I guess, you know, one of the other questions is how long does it take? Let's take Alexander Gundlewski, mm-hmm. who tried to be hypnotized and couldn't be hypnotized. So he wants to quit smoking. Mm-hmm. And so let's say that he comes to see you and you've come from the right school, so you could hypnotize everybody. And so even though he couldn't be hypnotized, you can hypnotize him. How many sessions would it take for him to actually quit smoking?
Mm-hmm. That's a very easy issue because smoking, you know, nicotine is a poison and it's a stimulant. So people think, oh, it relaxes me, but nicotine doesn't relax anyone. What's relaxing the person is their own brain. In other words, the problem of smoking is almost always in the mind. And unless someone's smoking more than two packs a day, if they're smoking more than two packs a day, then yes, there might be a nicotine issue, and I might suggest Chantix or something along with the hypnosis. But generally, this is a mind problem. The first thing to get into the smoking, my smoking cessation program, though, is I do an hour-long interview with them over the phone, and I make sure they really want to quit on the conscious level. So I ask several times, do you really want to quit? And if a person says even once, well, I'm really not sure, oh, I don't know, well, you know, if they get whiny, I say, I'm sorry, you're not ready for my program and I can't accept you. Now, somebody else might take their money, but I don't think it would be ethical because unless they're really on board consciously, they're not going to stick to it. So I need their total commitment. But if they pass, then it's only four sessions. They quit during the first session, assuming they're smoking less than two packs a day. They quit during the first session. They always report finding it amazingly easy. They come back for three more sessions a week apart in order to reinforce those neural pathways and in order to reinforce the tools that I teach them for self-relaxation. So that's what's going to take them into the future so that at those moments of stress that they would have, you know, reached for a cigarette in the past, they now have tools that they can use for themselves to relax themselves and comfort themselves. So they quit the first session, and then it's three more sessions.
You speak with such confidence. you know, most of the hypnotherapists I'd be like, if, you know, I've like mm-hmm. looked into, oh, well, it varies. You just never know. oh, no problem. You'll quit the first session.
Well, but that's because with the smoking cessation program. That's why I screen people so carefully. And I have turned several people away. I'm less interested in getting people's money than I am in success. I love success, and I want it to work. You know, I want the client to be happy and healthy. And hypnosis is all about giving the client more control over their own lives. So as long as I've got the client's commitment, then change is actually pretty easy, especially with smoking. Now, with smoking, you see, usually the client has developed this belief that smoking relaxes them. And the reason is, you know, maybe they began long ago smoking because of peer pressure, whatever, and so they've been smoking at times of hanging out with friends or taking a little break from themselves, at times of relaxation. So the brain has begun associating smoking with relaxation. Also, usually the first, when somebody lights up a cigarette, they take a big deep breath. They go, that in itself will always relax you physiologically. You know, anytime you have public speaking nerves or something, you need to call, you just take a big deep breath, as you know, and let it out. So the brain, because of the smoking being associated to moments of relaxation, the brain then decides smoking equals relaxation. Therefore, when the person reaches for a cigarette, the brain triggers all these relaxation effects throughout the body. But it's not the nicotine doing that. Nicotine can't do that. Nicotine is a stimulant and a very serious poison. You know, if you drank a thimble full of nicotine, you'd be instantly dead. It's bad stuff. So that's why that one is so easy to treat, because it really is a problem of the mind. Now, weight control is trickier. Weight control is usually 8 or more sessions, and it's trickier because our bodies are wired to hold on to the fat. You know, and food really does taste good. That's not just in your mind. You know, chocolate tastes wonderful, and fats and sugars are so good. You know, so weight loss is a tougher issue to tackle. Still, you know, still hypnotherapy is very effective, but it's not as cut and dried as the smoking. So I sound very confident with certain issues because they're more mental issues, really, than sometimes people realize. Something like weight control is a little tougher.
Now, so weight control, so losing weight through hypnotism is tougher than quitting smoking. And you're saying primarily because cigarettes are a poison.
Yes, and because our bodies are wired to hold on to fat and to get us to eat as much as we can. We evolved. We did not evolve to have so much fat and sugar so easily accessible to us. So it is natural for us to want to eat another chocolate bar, another piece of cake, another donut, another roll, whatever. That's actually natural. The body is wired like that. We actually have to learn willpower in order to not reach for those things. And, you know, the body is also wired. Sometimes people then starve themselves and they don't eat breakfast and they don't eat all day, thinking that's a good way to diet. And then the body is also wired to go into starvation mode when someone acts like that and to really hold on to all the fat. So our bodies are wired in such a way that we want to eat, we enjoy eating, and we seek out fats and sugars because we evolved over many, many years when there wasn't such food abundance as there is now. So, you know, anybody who wants to keep trim is, in a sense, going a little bit uphill against that. You know, not that it's so hard. You know, I mean, you and I are trim, and we don't find it terribly difficult. Once somebody gets in shape, then it's not so hard after, you know, and especially after the first year or so, because then it becomes a habit. And fortunately, the subconscious mind will hold on to a habit, and then being healthy becomes, you know, fairly effortless. Although still there may be moments where you think, I'd like another piece of chocolate cake, but I'm not going to, you know.
Oh, God, isn't that everybody's dream? We get to heaven and find out we can eat just as much chocolate as we want.
Yeah, heaven must look exactly like that game Candyland, you know.
I know it, and they're always coming out with research that says, oh, you can eat chocolate. It's good for you.
I eat chocolate every day. I love chocolate. But I do have clients who have a problem.
You know, actually my mother does too, but she eats the, what are those, cocaine nibs or whatever that don't have any sweetening in them.
Oh, uh-huh.
I mean, that's the thing about chocolate, I think, you know, it's the milk and the sugar.
Yeah. So if you can eat a dark chocolate with no milk and less sugar, a little bit bittersweet, much better for you.
Right, exactly. Or you can actually get the, like I said, the little nibs. It's just the bean, They sell it at the health food store.
Yum.
So anyhow, well, is there anything that hypnotism can't do? You'd say it's not great with eating disorders, but it sounds like it can be helpful.
I mean, even if it's not as sure a deal as smoking,
or am I reading that wrong?
No. Well, I shouldn't say it's not great. Many studies have shown it to be the most effective way to lose weight. It is, so it's extremely effective. It's just that my point was just that you're working against the body's natural evolution when you want to lose weight. But no, hypnotherapy has actually been proven in many studies to be the most effective way for people to lose weight. I mean, they have to eat healthy and do the exercising, but it really helps them with that. So, but I just meant it's more sessions, you know, and it's a little bit, people make progress, but they also have to, you know, they're a few steps back, maybe 3 steps forward and a couple steps back and so on until they really get into the groove. There are issues, of course, that hypnosis is not good for. For example, there are certain kinds of neurological, it's very good for most types of chronic pain, but there are certain types where the neurology is such that hypnosis can't seem to quite reach those parts of the neural system. For example, carpal tunnel I wouldn't recommend it for carpal tunnel pain.
So what kind of pain is it good for?
Just about anything else. People come in for pain in their legs, for arthritis, for accidents, for back pain. And it's also terrific. Actually, what's really hot in hypnotherapy now, becoming more and more popular, Harvard Medical School is very enthusiastic and excited about this, is using hypnotherapy to prepare people for surgery so that in surgery they need less chemical anesthetic. And, you know, anesthetic is not good for you. It's the leading cause of fatality during surgery. And so but using hypnosis so that people need less chemical anesthetic and so that their bodies respond better to the surgery, they have less blood loss, they have fewer complications, fewer infections, they heal more quickly, and they're much more comfortable healing because you teach them self-hypnosis techniques. When they come out of the surgery, they can also keep themselves at a very good comfort level, again, using less chemical anesthesia. So, you know, that's and that's been shown to be effective in all kinds of surgery. The results are astonishing. It's even speeded the mending of broken bones. And again, you know, this stuff sounds too good to be true, but go online, look at the research, especially what's coming out of Harvard Medical School, and it's just amazing.
So that is amazing. That really, and yet they don't know what hypnotism really is. I mean, they can verify the results, but they can't really verify the process.
We don't know why aspirin works, by the way.
We don't.
No. And there's plenty of things we really don't know why they work. Many drugs on the market were developed for one thing, didn't work for that. Somebody accidentally noticed, hey, it works for this other thing. They tested it, finds it works for the other thing. We use it. We never really understand why. Maybe sometime down the road we will. So hypnosis is not alone in that. And, you know, in science, what really matters is repeatable results. So when you have many doctors doing many rigorous studies in universities all over the world and medical institutions all over the world and getting the same positive results, you know you're onto something. You know, now why hypnosis works, it's a mystery. But the entire mind and the subconscious mind is a mystery. Dreaming is a mystery. You know, why we dream and how we problem solve during our dreams, very mysterious. So, you know, it's a mystery and there's more to be found out. And to me, that's just one of the exciting aspects of science, is that the more you know you don't know.
It's that way about all things in life. And for our listeners right now, I just want to check in with you and I'll let you know that we are on Facebook right now. So if you've got some questions that you want to post without actually having to call into our studio here, if you're one of my almost 1,300 friends on Facebook, then you're subscribed. And I would just say go over to my wall and check it out. I've been posting through this entire broadcast. Matter of fact, I just put up Jane Ransom's website, It's hypnotherapythatworks.com. That's all spelled like one word, hypnotherapythatworks.com. And you can go there right now and check out her services. Also, if you are not on Facebook and you want to call in, you happen to be listening live and you want to call in with a comment, then please feel free to contact us here at the studio at 530, that's area code 530-413-4515. Once again, that's 530-413-4515. If you want to call in live. Okay, so what other things would you like people to know about hypnotherapy? Do some people come to you with unrealistic expectations and you kind of have to give them a reality check? And if so, what?
Sometimes people come in and have a whole laundry list. And I explain we need to work through these things one by one. When I started out a few years ago, by the way, so I'm not, you know, I don't have the 20 years of experience, but I've been working like crazy since then, and so I am still in a state of amazement and delight myself at how well things work. When I first started out, I became so excited that I could help people with so many different issues that I used to throw in everything and try to help them with everything at once, and I realized the effect dissipated. It really wasn't as effective as simply going through each issue one by one. And it turns out that the subconscious mind really responds better to a sharp focus. So when somebody comes in and says, oh, I want help with my marriage and my job and my weight, you know, and often those things turn
We're back to Amber Norton, who said she wanted to change everything.
Everything, exactly, exactly. I say, yes, you can do it, and probably working on your weight will improve both your job and your marriage, and probably working, you know, and vice versa. Everything affects everything else, but you have to work issue by issue. And the other thing is that I really need the client's commitment to change. Sometimes, if I have someone coming in because their spouse wanted them to come in, for example, they may not actually want the change. And so I can't make them change. I can't make them do or be anything. They really have to want it. And I'm really just giving to them the tools and the opportunity to change if they really want the change. But they can't be passive. It's not talk therapy. I'm not passive, and they're not passive either. When they're under hypnosis, their subconscious mind is getting quite a workout. So they stay with me, and they focus, and they work pretty hard, even though their body's in a state of deep relaxation. So I would just say the one thing about hypnosis to keep in mind is that you don't want to go into it passively and thinking, well, let's see if it'll work. Let's see what she can do for me. Because, frankly, that would be wasting everyone's time. If you ever do hypnotherapy, you want to go into it with the attitude, how is this going to be beneficial to me? How can I make this most beneficial? And stay curious and open. And, you know, my best clients are the ones, they get a feeling and an understanding of how hypnosis works and how it works for them in particular. And they come in each week saying, hey, this week let's do this. I want this week. You know, one of my clients came in recently and she said, I want to work on my guilt for when I was younger and this and that, and I think it's, you know, I just realized it can't kind of surface because of other stuff we've been working on. And so I say, great. And we don't spend the whole session going back to that childhood experience. We just get in there and immediately start kind of eradicating the guilt. So the clients who really understand it works and what they really want are the ones that get the most out of it.
So, okay, so it's not a magic wand, but it does sound like it can really accelerate things that you're working on.
Amazingly so. I am amazed every day. You know, I had some study clients coming in for there's a big exam if you want to be an acupuncturist in California, and you have to take this huge state exam on Chinese herbal medicine, and I had a couple clients coming in to reduce their test anxiety. Both of them had testing anxiety their entire lives. And one of these clients had failed the test the first time, not because she didn't know the answers. She's very smart and studious, but because of this test anxiety. And so she's terrified that she was going to fail again. And, in fact, the first failure was making her even more anxious, so she no doubt would have. But she came in and we worked together to reduce the anxiety. She was totally relaxed during the exam, passed with flying colors, you know. So, again, another instance of, wow, you know, and I'm still amazed when I got her phone call and, you know, especially in her case because the anxiety had been so severe, I just think, wow, this really, really works.
Well, that's really good. So you're still very excited about your work, even though you've been doing it for how many years?
This is my third year. As you were mentioning, you know, I was a newspaper editor for many years. I taught creative writing at various universities. I worked in graphic design. And I find that I'm drawing on all those things from, you know, from my journalism years, my interviewing skills, from my teaching years, my leadership and communication skills, from my graphic design, my ability to create visual images. So I'm drawing on everything from before, but I can't tell you, Veronica, how much more gratifying this work is, because every day I'm actually helping people.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? I'll tell you something. I get up with, in the morning, I just wake up so excited about the day.
Yes.
And
yes,
it largely is because I know I'm going to get to help people.
Yes, you're exactly doing the same thing. And I want to tell you something, by the way. I didn't know when you invited me to be on your show, I didn't know it was, you know, the shame-free zone, you know. And so then I looked it up on the web and it said adult only. And I thought, oh, that's so funny because I don't share that tidbit about the erotic novel with a lot of people, they, you know, because not everybody is open-minded.
Yeah.
And I also, back in the past, wrote a column for Playboy, by the way.
Oh, well, aren't you just a delight? I know there was something I liked about you, Jane. What was your column for Playboy?
It was basically about how to, how to approach women. My basic approach was, look, women like sex. We want sex. So instead of feeling like we're the enemy, just get to know us. And if you learn how to seduce a woman and how to please a woman once you've seduced her, then, you know, you'll get what you want. She'll get what she wants and what you want, and she'll be grateful besides.
Oh, my God. This is great. How long did you have this column?
Oh, it was just a brief thing. Yeah, I just
brief thing. I was quoted in Playboy magazine twice.
Uh huh.
Actually.
All right, I like it.
Made the Playboy forum, and then they actually interviewed me about some adult films that I was producing because I wanted to produce woman friendly porn, something that wasn't an insult to females. And labeled one of my first films, said it was a groundbreaker in the feminization of porn.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. I've been on the Playboy channel about, two or three times, too.
Oh, that's
so
terrific.
Playboy and I go back, too.
That is terrific. That's great.
Oh,
it's funny,
great.
Too, because I found out that through that I realized that people I knew read Playboy who'd never mentioned it before, you know.
Oh, well, that's the whole thing. I mean, that's why we have the shame-free zone here. Fact of the matter is that, as you know, as if the news doesn't let us know this on a daily basis, because yet again some sports figure or politician gets caught in some kind of a sex scandal. But, you know, we're human beings, and it seems like we're desperately trying to pretend that we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And that
can do damage. That repression, or you know, that we almost got rid of a president because you know he had a blowjob. I mean, it's crazy. It gets crazy.
it's insane. Our value system is so strange to me. And you know, we're subjecting. I mean, when you look at even the way that movies are rated, you have to be so careful that any type of nudity or sexuality, but you could just show all the electrocution, hanging, stabbing, machine gunning, you know, chainsawing, blood and gore, whatever you want. You know, it's just like, it just gets more and more gory and violent.
Yeah.
But boy, we don't, in that, apparently, you know, people say, oh, that has no effect on the minds of children, but boy, if we were to let them see two people making love, they'd be scarred for life.
And you know, so many studies are now showing that the violence and so on does have an effect on our neural maps and on our brain maps. Although video games, as you probably know, are often beneficial in terms of increasing people's response rates and so on. So,
oh, as far as hand-eye coordination, great. It makes them just, they're really well-trained for the Army.
Yeah, and quick problem-solving and some other things. So video games are not at all evil.
Some of the games that are out there are evil just because of their content.
Well, I was just going to agree with you, and there are many studies exactly showing that violent content, whether it's video games, television, movies, whatever, actually does have a large effect. In fact, they've definitively shown that when you have a kid watching violence repeatedly, that child is much more likely to engage in violence or to feel comfortable with violence.
Right.
Yeah, and so that part's pretty sad and a little bit alarming. I know, and you're right, there is such a duality and a duplicity between that and how we look at sex. It's a little bit crazy and not
well,
really.
Well, I actually study this in depth, and I've been contrasting the chimpanzee and the bonobo, which are two apes that we're very closely related to, our closest genetic ancestors here on the planet. But the bonobo and the chimpanzee look like the same animal, but they have nothing in common culturally.
Mm-hmm.
So the chimpanzees got a very abusive attitude towards sex.
How interesting.
Like one dominant male who has access to all the females, which of course doesn't mean that they're consensual. And and so there's created this artificial scarcity so that the other males are not able to access sexual activity. And so there's domestic violence, and there's infanticide, there's rape, there's murder, there's war. All these things. Jane Goodall did not think that chimpanzees had any of these problems. She ran off to Africa to live with the chimps, thought she never wanted to see another human being as long as she lived. And then her beautiful, wonderful chimps declared a four-year war. And she saw atrocities that blew her mind.
Wow.
So you contrast it with the bonobo. The bonobo actually is more of a female-centric culture, so the grandmothers have a great deal of power.
Really?
They do. And they're very, very promiscuous. There is just all kinds of sex going on all the time between everybody. So which just really defies the thing, you know, people think they invented sex, and it's like, nope, you didn't. The bonobos got to all this stuff before you did. And so they do face-to-face, heart chakra to heart chakra, tantra-like sex, they you know, oral sex, French kissing, lesbian, gay, group sex. And I think not coincidentally, they don't have violence. Now, yes, they have arguments, and every once in a while somebody might get their finger bitten. And since they don't have medical care, that means you could lose a finger. But they're not ripping arms and legs off and drinking each other's blood, and they don't have any war, they don't have any murder, and they don't have any rape.
That's amazing. That's
and if you start studying human cultures, you'll see a similar pattern. Where the more there is this possessive property attitude towards sex, and very territorial attitude towards sex, the more likely the males are going to physically abuse the females.
Yes, yes. You're absolutely right, and it's one reason that we should always make equality of the sexes. It's really an international issue. And when we turn away and say, oh, that's their local issue, it's not really, because it affects us on all these levels, you know, politically.
I'm kind of tired of hearing, well, that's their culture. You know what?
Right. Yeah.
Genocide is some people's culture.
exactly, thank you.
let's not hide behind that word.
yeah, exactly true. Wow, that's fascinating research. You must have so much fun doing research for your work.
Well, I can't say that I'm ever bored. No,
right.
And I'm sure not unlike you. I hear, you know, people share things with me that they don't share with their spouses, and they're priests or rabbis, you know. They, I hear things people thought they were going to go to their grave with. So I think it's such a supreme honor. It's such an honor, and it's also, you know, a real huge responsibility. To basically always greet those secrets that evoke a lot of shame in people with as much love and acceptance as you possibly can.
You're right, and I'd love to ask you a question.
Well, go for it.
Okay, so in my work, and I'm going to guess that this probably happens in your work, sometimes I'll have a client get a crush on me, you know, and that's natural. It's just like getting a crush on your favorite teacher, or anyone that brings up and resonates with something within us and causes learning. We tend to get a crush.
Right.
And so that's
right.
Fine because it helps. It actually helps the hypnotherapy. You know, but I always have to tell them, I'm so flattered, I'm so honored, and I would never, ever act on that because it would violate you, no matter how you're thinking about it. And the fact we're both adults, our boundaries here are inviolable, and I will always be here for you to give you that unconditional, you know, approval and help and love. But there are boundaries, and I have to keep those intact in order to protect you. Otherwise, it would be like the teacher preying on the student. It would be exploitive. And, you know, most clients end up being actually surprised and then relieved. And I bet what I wanted to know is, does this come up in your work also, and how do you handle it? I would think it might come up even more often.
Well, the potential is definitely there because of the background in the sex industry. I have never, ever tried to divorce myself from that. And so, you know, those videos are still available. So sometimes people will come in through that door, get a video, and then, you know. But I am just the boundary queen.
Oh, that's terrific. That's wonderful.
And I usually bring it back to what I know the client actually really wants and needs.
Yes.
So rather than focusing on what I would or wouldn't do, you know, if it comes down to it that I actually have to go there, yes, I will. But I usually challenge them and go back to, you know, seriously, why would you have contacted me for this particular service if that's what you really wanted?
Right.
And let's follow it out. Let's say that the things that you're talking about happened. Then where would this take you? So it takes all the mystery and the intrigue out of it. Now it's not fun anymore.
Right. Yeah.
It's turned into this very serious conversation about repercussions.
And
it's like, okay, never mind. You're right.
You know, and fantasy, that also brings up the subject of fantasy. You know, I think fantasy is so wonderful. And it's also a wonderful thing that we don't have to always act out our fantasies. And it might
If somebody tells me they've got a fantasy, I go, great. That's wonderful. I hope that it helps you sleep at night, and I'm honored to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Now let's get back to work.
Right. Exactly.
So I make sure that I am, I think the most important thing is that I am crystal clear about what my objectives are and what I am available for and what I'm not available for. And I just, you know, I just, with love and acceptance, and I'm very careful never to shame people, just keep bringing them back to what we're working on and the bigger, larger goals that I'm trying to accomplish for them.
Right. I mean, ultimately, you're serving them and helping them and protecting them, and that's your job, so you're doing your job.
It is, and I absolutely, it's very important that they know that this would create a total lack of safety for you.
Yeah.
And all the objectives that you approached me with, that you had, because, you know, if they approach with that objective, then it's like, I'm sorry, that's not available. So here's the services that I do offer, and if you're interested in that, that's great, and if you're not, then I suggest you move along and find what you're looking for elsewhere.
Right.
So that's the buy-in, of course. It's like, okay, well, then I've signed up for those services that you do offer. So then if they get distracted or start trying to go down other blind alleys, then it's just a matter of continually bringing them back to the stated goals.
Yeah, that sounds great.
But the one thing that I think that the real gift that I can offer is that we can actually explore those fantasies and those crushes in an environment where I don't get triggered and I don't get shocked. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that it's not, and I refuse to react to it personally, which can be very frustrating.
Because
I'm not flattered. You know what I mean?
It's a
non-event for me. It's like I'm kind of beyond being flattered. I'm just like, okay, well, let's talk about that. Let's go into that further. What do you think's going on here?
Right. Yeah. And you're tracking down what it is they actually need and what it is the actual issue.
Exactly, because I'm more interested about, you know, like sometimes that is a ploy to avoid. It's an avoidance pattern.
Well, now that is true, and even with my clients, because my clients are, you know, maybe don't come on to me in exactly the same way, but I just have the occasional kind of crush come up, you know, and you know, the idea that, oh, let's go have dinner sometime, and I have to explain, you know, no, I don't have dinner with my clients. Thanks. But it does eventually lead back on track in terms of what they really want and the avoidance issue. For example, I had a client coming in, and we went through the whole crush, let's have dinner, no, I don't do that. And then the kind of relief on his part to know that I don't do that. And then, what do you know, a couple of sessions later, it comes out that he's got many, many lovers, and it's actually kind of a problem in his life.
Right. Exactly. He was testing.
Yeah. He was seeing if I would join the clan, you know. And if he had, he wouldn't have been able to tell me about it. So,
If you had failed that test, then he would have had to find somebody else to help him with the problem, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so, then I would have been part of the problem. Yep.
Yes. Right. And I used to like to mess with my therapist.
Uh-huh.
I wonder how tightly wrapped they are. Let's see if I can unnerve them. So I'm kind of onto those things. But I like to explore it with people rather than just say I'm sorry, I'm not available for that, or I don't do that. Constantly asserting that thing to me, somewhere in the back of their mind, it's going to still have some appeal.
Well, you know,
I am directly working with people's sexuality.
Yes,
I just use that as a golden opportunity to go in. Okay, let's look at that. Let's analyze it. Let's talk about it. Let's dissect it. Yeah. And, you know, by the time I've pulled the thing apart, they are of lost interest.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, it's not sexy anymore.
Right. Yeah, that makes absolute sense. Yeah, because they are there for that specific issue with you, so you have to go there when they bring it up.
Well, sure, especially like if you're working with sex addiction, you know, which the guy that you're talking about sounds like potentially could have been some elements of that there. I don't know.
I wouldn't want to pathologize him, but it was an interesting aspect of you know, information I wouldn't have gotten had I joined the the harem.
Well, I specifically have people come to me for sex addiction, and acknowledging that somebody has an addiction, I don't consider that pathologizing them. That's simply helping them, you know, understand that there are certain dynamics involved in addiction that may require certain behaviors in order to, you know, to counteract. And I don't use your bag of tricks. I usually take people down a road of recovery. So.
Yeah.
Which oftentimes is about doing, you know, more of an inventory. So you've got to like explore it further. It's like, okay, well that's interesting that you bring that up when, you know, oftentimes the sexual innuendo or the pass comes right when there's actually being some progress made.
Right, yeah. So a little resistance coming up.
Absolutely. It's a nice smokescreen, you know?
Yeah. Very interesting. You'd have to be Yeah, you have to be pretty strong in your boundaries, as you were saying, I think.
Well, you know, I have so much love for my clients. I really do.
Aren't they great? Isn't it wonderful to have clients?
It is.
Yeah,
it
I
is,
know.
And it's wonderful to be a client. I think, you know, to me, just,
yeah.
You know, the larger reality here is just that we as human beings really cannot do our lives as well alone.
Yes, and I think we're getting so many tools now. It's so fortunate to be living at a time when we have access to so many tools and that we can get help from others and that so many others have done exploring and studying and honing the tools so that, for example, I can have hypnotherapy with my hypnotherapist by telephone every other week, which I do, and that exists and that she can help me with so many things. You know, whereas in our mother's generation, I don't think that would have been necessarily so, you know.
It's not, actually. My mother and I have talked about that quite often. Like,
you have, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, just about, you know, the things that were not available to her.
Uh-huh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just the concepts, even.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, just like the concepts about domestic violence or,
right.
You know, some attitudes, like, you know, it was just like those things were normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then of course if you don't have the terminology for it, then you don't really have a way to even acknowledge any of the emotional pain that goes with it.
Yes, you know, there was an equatorial tribe, and I can't remember exactly where, but some colonizing people wanted to teach these natives to hunt for gold because this is a very gold-rich area. And they didn't have the word in their vocabulary for yellow. They had no concept of yellow.
Oh.
And And it's interesting because, you know, the colors are all along a spectrum. There is no actual divider between the colors. We simply name them at this point and that point. And so they're concepts. But so this particular tribe had no concept for yellow. And they could not find gold until they learned a word for yellow. And learned the concept yellow. Once they had the concept and a word, then they became good at finding gold. But until then, they just couldn't even see that color differentiation when they were looking at the pebbles.
I had heard something similar about the ships that were coming to the New World on the horizon. Because they'd never seen ships like that before, that it was difficult to even register that there was something out there. It seems
terrific.
A little difficult for me to believe, but I had heard something like that.
Huh. Very interesting.
So ships don't exist because we've never seen them before.
Right.
I suppose I could understand that to some point, because you remember the video they showed us at the seminar with the gorilla in it?
Yeah, I've always been fascinated by that.
I couldn't see it.
You know, I read about that test before I ever got to see the video, so I knew what to look for.
Oh, you cheated.
Well,
okay,
I didn't mean to cheat. But it's a wonderful experiment. I'm sure I would have failed also. I love that experiment. Yeah, and do you want to describe it for your listeners just so they know what we're talking about?
There was, just briefly, because we're running out of time here, they had two teams playing basketball. We were supposed to keep track of how many times the basketball passed between the white shirts and the, I don't know, was it blue shirts?
Something like that.
Two different teams that were wearing two different colors of shirts. And so I was so busy watching that basketball and trying to count that I never did see the guy in the gorilla suit who walked right through the game, and very slowly, as a matter of fact. He didn't run. He walked very slowly, stopped, looked around.
Just pounded his chest like a gorilla would.
I know. It's crazy.
I know. So, most people don't notice the gorilla simply because they're not watching for a gorilla. So there's
no.
So many
and it's so out of context. And that was mind-boggling to me.
It is mind-boggling. Yeah.
So before we get off the air here, I just want to check in with Facebook one more time. We got Melanie Hawaii, or Hawaii, perhaps. Melanie, I'm so sorry. I think I'm not saying your last name properly. But anyway, she also wants esteem motivation. So you had said self-esteem is a pretty common one. And that's something that came up for her as well. And then Tanya Diamond, she doesn't want to change a thing. So.
Good for her. Good
just
for her.
Just want to make sure all my listeners got accounted for here before we sign up. Do you want to go ahead and tell people how they can contact you before we say goodnight?
Sure. I have a business phone number, which is 415-341-7888. And the best way to look at more information, again, is the website, which is hypnotherapythatworks, all one word, .com. And my name is Jane Ransom, R-A-N-S-O-M, just like Kidnap Money.
I know. It's a great name.
It's got money in it.
Well, I got you posted all over Facebook, too, so I hope
Thank you so much,
queries. And we didn't even get a chance to talk about your erotic novel. We'll have to have you back on to talk about that.
Okay, that'll be fun. And thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Oh, thank you. You were a great interview, and I'm looking forward to my first session because I got
some
stuff I want to work on.
Oh, good. I can't wait. Great.
All right, Jane. All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, and have a great night.
You too, dear. Good night.
Bye-bye.